This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Brandon Contes.
All righty, welcome to episode 18 of the Awful Announcing Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Contes, and I guess I should get this out of the way quick as a sort of PSA. I am mid-move right now, literally have movers bringing stuff from my old house to my new one as we speak. So I'm at my neighbor's house and they have cats and I keep seeing them like poking their head out. So if a cat pops up on camera, there's not much that that I could do about it. If it jumps on the laptop or anything, you know, I'll try to avoid that as much as possible. But this week, in addition to the possible cat appearance, we are lucky to be joined by Fox Sports three sports star Chris Myers. Chris, thank you so much for taking some time to come on the podcast today. Are you ready for some football?
Look, America, I think a donut or coffee company had the slogan, but America runs on football. That's no disdain on any other sport, but I'm talking about the year round and how it goes. So yes, everybody's fired up for whatever your connection. And that was my first passion as somebody growing up and getting into sports. So yeah, I love it. I'm always ready for football, no matter what else is going on, especially the NFL.
Yeah. And it is football season. It's 95 degrees outside in New York where I am right now, so it doesn't quite feel like it. But the NFL does kick off this week, which is just an awesome feeling. But you've been doing this for so many years now. Does the job ever become redundant, or do you still get a rush when you see that 70,000 people eagerly awaiting the kickoff?
Yes. No. Still, there are parts of the job, right? They get a little routine or frustrating, but no. I mean, I'm still a fan at heart. And that's how it began, especially TV, you know, watching TV, listening to the radio about sports. So when the games start, when there's a kickoff, and then there's a rush. And then, you know, selfishly on the other side, is more than half my life now in broadcasting, specifically TV, when the light goes on, when the mic is open, there's still a bit of a rush there. You know, there's still, I won't call it nerves, right, but there's kind of an adrenaline thing, like, okay, here we go. You know, we're doing this for real. So, and every sport brings that out of you when you're covering it or calling it, but especially the NFL for obvious reasons.
This year, you're teamed up with Robert Smith and Jen Hale, and you'll help Fox Sports kick off their 30th NFL season by calling the Carolina Panthers and Atlanta Falcons game on Sunday. First game for Bryce Young. Is that exciting, getting to call the number one pick's first career start in the NFL?
Yes. Yeah, there's something to that. It's funny. There's been, thinking of some of the other quarterbacks through the years, I did games in their very first year, but not the very first game of the first overall pick.
Right.
And obviously I look forward. I didn't cover college football and Bryce Young was there specifically, so I don't really know him. So we have our production meetings, our sit down time, other than getting to a practice. And so it'll be nice. I've obviously seen interviews, nice to sit down with him face to face without cameras and everything in his face and just get to know him a little bit more, get a feel for him. So when we're calling the game, other than who we talk to around him, it's good to have that. So yeah, it's an interesting element. In fact, that the way our schedule lines up, and nothing's really official, the games can slide in terms of the broad, but we may in the next few weeks get a CJ Stroud game, him starting in Houston wouldn't be his first game, and then Anthony Richardson with the Colts. And so there'll be a lot of that, at least early in the season, which I look forward to. Not that you don't mind, and I've sat down with guys like Aaron Rodgers and Matthew Stafford through the years, but it's refreshing sometimes to see somebody and how much they're going to open up, you know, their first year in the NFL when they sit down and do these types of meetings. They don't do them a lot in college, at least not to this level. But Bryce Young seems like a very easy guy to talk to and to get information from that we can use in the broadcast for the audience.
Are there other younger players that you can look back on and kind of remember calling, maybe not even their first game, but if it was just from their first season and walking away, whether it's from watching them play in the game or from one of those pregame meeting interviews, and kind of like thinking that they have the opportunity to do something special in their careers?
Yeah, right away you could tell. I go as far back as a Peyton Manning, and wasn't actually calling his games, but was in meetings early. He stood out. Russell Wilson, who wasn't a high pick, obviously, but won the job. And so when you sat down with him and called quite a few of his games in his rookie season with Seattle, and you just knew he had something in the way that he spoke. And there are some guys, you know, that they're, you know, I can't think of any offhand, but they're just, well, Jared Goff, for example, right, that are shy and they're not rude. They're just not as open, their personality. Maybe they're a little more introverted, at least with us. And so you can't get as much of a read, but you know that they take their craft seriously, and they're either, especially at that quarterback position, they're either perfectionists, you know, or there's some leader thing, you know, leadership skill jumps out at you. So you do see those things early. And then some guys, you know, I don't want to necessarily name names, but you're almost like, I don't know if that guy has it. Sometimes we're wrong, sometimes we're not. But often you get an early read that maybe this guy isn't cut out to be the main man.
Sure. When do you start preparing for the season? Are you studying teams throughout the entire summer, or do you not really like ramp up until you get closer to the preseason?
Yeah, when I say America runs on football, I think you have to year round, right? The NFL between, and they really had, whether it's the draft, their free agent signing, the release of the schedule. You know, Fox encourages us. I do preseason games separately than Fox. I do, and I've done for years since I'm originally from Florida. I do the Buccaneer preseason games, and I have for years. And that's a good tune-up, you know, just to get into a broadcast rhythm. And it helps you to follow the game. You'll see not only that team, but opposing coaches and players, and they're in a relaxed atmosphere when they're out at the game or before the game. So that helps you stay on point. And we get notes and clips from a gathering of all the teams and local writings, newspapers, and you kind of read that daily. I mean, it's kind of a fun thing as a fan. So that keeps us, or at least keeps me, and I would be interested in it anyway, in the loop on whatever's going on. And then you kind of hone in a little bit more as you get closer to the season. And we know which teams, we knew probably a month ago or so, that we would be doing this Atlanta-Carolina opener. So you start zeroing in on those particular teams and players a little bit more closely. And you rely on, at least I do, relationships through the years. When Arthur Smith was an assistant coach with Tennessee, I could talk to him about some things. So now he's a head coach. So, and there's some players that have moved around, or teams that have, players that have faced the teams you're going to see, or coaches. And they'll sometimes say, hey, look for this guy. Boy, this guy's really talented. So you can bring that into, and the analyst really does more of that. But I'm just a fan. So I like to, or at least I approach it that way in the beginning. I like to do that too, so I can bring it up to talk to the analyst about that, whoever that is.
Are those preseason games challenging? Just the fact the amount of players that are going to be playing in those games that might not be factors during the NFL season that fans have never heard of before, that you've never covered right before. I mean, it's a long list of players that you have to kind of be ready for to see on the field, especially as you get to the fourth quarter of some of those early preseason games.
Yeah, it is. It's very difficult. And you have some help with people in the booth or the team. Hey, you know, these guys are more likely practice squad, and you really got to dig in, because I've never heard of some of these guys or their colleges. Yeah. It's almost impossible start out with 90 players. And now you keep the 90 players all the way through all three preseason games, and then you make the cut for the final roster, right? You used to chip away after each game because, of course, there's only three preseason games, and we'll be at a point at some point sooner than later where we're going to have two preseason and 18 regular season once the players union and the NFL sorts that out. But anyway, it's a very important time. So it is, but as a broadcaster, it's a challenge, but you see guys that, okay, they got released here and they're going over to this team, and I might have that team during the course of the year, and he gets called up to play. So even the guys that don't make it, sometimes they'll appear in a USFL game or they get a second chance in the league, or at least there's something interesting in their college background. It's amazing how many players appear so talented. Their stats are impressive, whether it's a small school or not, and yet they can't even, you know, they're on a roster, but it's hard for them to break in. So that's why I'm glad there's other leagues for players who love the game and want to play it. But yeah, it is. It's a challenge. So that makes it, when you start the game, Brandon, or the regular season game, you go, wow, look at this. All these names are off the board, and now I only have to concentrate on, you know, 53 or actually 47 active, whatever it is, for that particular game. So in a sense, it's you know, you're cramming, and then it's a little bit, okay, take a breath. We've got less players, and we can zero in on them specifically, and more familiar players.
So you had mentioned, obviously, that you get, there's still that adrenaline rush watching or being there for a regular season game with 70,000 people calling that game, but you don't quite get those nerves or jitters anymore. But what about the Super Bowl and when they throw it to you for a sideline report? Are you able to treat that as just another game, or is it impossible to ignore the fact that there are potentially 100 million people in that moment that could be watching you?
Yeah, I try to treat it that way, and I do now. But initially, and I've done six or seven Super Bowls as the, you know, the network team reporter for Fox. I was on the sideline, the Chiefs, when they won against the 49ers their first time, right, with Mahomes, first one for Andy Reid, with that group, I should say. And also the Brady comeback, which is fascinating, with the Patriots against Atlanta, the only overtime Super Bowl. But the first Super Bowl I did, and I've worked with Pam Oliver and Aaron Andrews sharing sidelines, I remember having done a little bit, you know, some play of this. It was the Eagles and the Patriots, the Super Bowl down in Jacksonville. And Troy Brown, the versatile player, I was going to do a live pre-game hit, two questions kind of thing, right before kickoff. You know, we're trying to do that more. Some teams don't like to do that, or players, but we were able to get this done. So Troy Brown comes over, and the producer is in my ear saying, "Hey, we're going to come to you." And so I'm just going to ask you a couple of quick questions. You know, I said, "Don't, you know, I know you got a game to play, but don't be thrown off by 100 million people watching." As I'm telling him that, I'm thinking to myself, "God, 100 million, this is more than I've been, and it starts to get to me." And the producer's like, "All right, I hear Joe Buck. Let's go down to Chris Myers with a special guest." And I kind of froze. And it felt like 2 minutes to me. But and I can hear the producer going, "Chris, can you hear us? You're on. And he's in my ear. And Troy Brown is kind of, he's like tapping with his foot. He's like tapping me, like below the camera, like, shouldn't we be going? Because we're going to have to kick off here. And then I'm like, yeah. And I just threw out the question. I don't even know what the question was. And he was cool. He answered. And then the second question was a little more specific about, you know, taking on the Eagles and the defense or whatever it was. And so, I guess the audience may not have known because of how it went. But after that moment, I'm like, I am never going to think about that kind of how big it is. Do that during the week. So I can only imagine, right, what a player's going through. But in the broadcast, especially, you can't. So in the rest of the game, too, you know, you get that out of your head. It's the job. It's in the moment. And it's not another game, let's be honest. But it is another part of the job that you've done before. So you just apply that and you're a little bit more careful. So, yeah, after that, I made sure in any situation, I didn't think of, to me, that's my corny slogan is every night's the Super Bowl. And it's funny because they even tease me. They're like, "Chris, you always say that. Well, now this is for real." But that way I always would treat every broadcast as important as a big game. And so there I had to kind of level that out a little bit. But funny story. So from that point on, I think I've been able to handle that for the most part.
Did you ever watch that interview back to see exactly how long it was? Like, I know you said it felt like 2 minutes, but like, was it?
Yeah, I did. I did. And it felt, even the later, the producer was like, "Was everything all right? We thought maybe you had all." Cause, but there's been a few games where we've done, believe it or not, even with all the great technology, certain things happen at a certain time. And right before a kick, when you're supposed to do your report, or there's some audio issues or interference, right, that's out of your control. And so, boy, sometimes you just go, or sometimes you have to, you know, there's a little delay. I think you've seen those kinds of things. So you try not for those to happen, or you work hard so they don't have that. And you always have a backup plan. But yeah, I think I did go back. Yeah, at the time I did. I haven't watched it back in years. I don't even know if that actually exists, because it was in the pre part of the game. I don't know if it was as close to the start, if they had an old tape or a reel. But yeah, it was, to me, it was very noticeable. And so that's why I'm very cautious about that. Sometimes now I even jump the cues when people are like, "Hey, you're on." So, but yeah, it was one of those life learning lessons on a network level, which hopefully the audience didn't, they probably just thought, "Hey, the crowd's going crazy. And it's what he's embracing and absorbing the atmosphere in the moment." But thankfully to Troy Brown, he was pretty cool about it and actually handled it very well.
How was interviewing Tom Brady after that comeback Super Bowl win? And is that something like, or is that on you to have to find the players and almost chase them down for an interview, or are they like aware to kind of look out for you?
Yeah, in some cases they're aware, but that game was unique. And if you go back and watch the video, because number one, the whole game, I had interviewed Bill Belichick at the half, and he obviously wasn't very, you know, excited about it because they were losing. On that sideline, you did. Brady was cool with, although he was fiery, you had a sense, hey, they could come back and make a game of this. But then when they force the overtime and then have the momentum, sometimes in situations, the NFL helps to have a rep down there to help you to get a player before they set up the stage for the trophy and that type of thing. But here they didn't, or if they did, he wasn't around. And I had a kind of a field producer helping me, to move around and with the camera equipment. However, because this game went to overtime, and they usually just limit the network access to the sidelines right at the end of the game. But in this case, when they let him down early in the fourth quarter, so when it went to overtime, you had everybody down there, all the other media that normally wouldn't be there that early, international media, local media, et cetera, it's writers from. So you had many more people. So when that game ended, the producer was telling me, hey, you know, we want to get, you know, as soon as it ends, like we're in position if the Falcons win, Aaron Andrews gets, you know, Matt Ryan, and before the trophy set up, if they said get Brady, if New England pulls this off. So then in overtime when they do, I'm on that sideline with the Patriots and I'm rushing to get Brady, and there's so many people. I mean, it really was a stampede. It was actually, you know, physically a little bit dangerous. The person I got with got trained. I had a security guy get knocked over, and you could watch this just getting to Brady, and then the cameraman had with his equipment couldn't quite get there, so they had to take the wide overhead because you want to get to him as quickly as you can. Yeah. I mean, with the emotion. Running in there and again, I'm trying to think of the right questions to ask because the game changed so much. And remember, that was the year soon after the, you know, his mother had been ill, the Deflategate thing, right? There was a little redemption going on. And so in the game, there was there were so many specific game things. So usually in that moment, you want to get there, since it didn't end on a signature moment with the overtime score. It was more about, you know, hey, wow, greatest comeback ever. And how sweet is this compared to other Super Bowls you've been in? And what about, you know, things off the field? I forget, you can go back and watch. I only had a few minutes here, a few questions to get in there. You don't want to hold him too long. And he's surrounded by all kinds of people. And people are coming up to him and hugging him. And physically, we're getting jostled around. So, you know, they tried to just get the camera on Brady. And people are getting hit in the head with the back of a camera. It was one of the more physically. I felt like I had played in the last few snaps of that game. But Brady was cool under pressure, and I don't know that he was even ready. In fairness to him, I think he was exhausted after that. And I, you know, he wasn't really ready to do the interview. But I just said, you know, hey Tom, we're going live, you know, on Fox. And obviously then he, you know, he's savvy enough to know it was this Super Bowl audience, and he just had the greatest comeback. So he rolled with me on the interview, even though it was a drain to him, but he wasn't quite ready. But he was professional about it, and it was one of those special moments.
In your interviews and conversations with Tom Brady throughout your career and his, did you ever think of him as being somebody that would make a good analyst someday? That's what he plans on doing in his second career with Fox now?
Yeah, I will say in those production meetings, you really get a sense of guys, as I was telling you about, what kind of quarterback or leader when they're young, right? From our observation. And coaches know better than we do, but we're just from our early taste of their personality. But Brady is a much more thorough, detailed, conversational kind of guy in those meetings when he's comfortable. One of the guys, sense of humor, a lot of things. Not that I've been on a lot of those with him, but from Super Bowls I have. And so you could see, hey, if a guy wants to do it, I just wondered if he'd ever really want to do the broadcast, almost like a Peyton Manning. You know, this guy could be an owner of a team, which he is in certain ways. He could do a lot of things. So I would say that because even Troy Aikman, I thought, boy, Troy has kind of a, not a shy personality, but not as outward. At least that was the impression. Not as much of a talker as you would think, as when he was playing, and then he's turned into one of the better broadcasters. So you never really know. But I like Troy Aikman, and I'll relate him to that because that's somebody who I worked with and then covered him as a player with Tom Brady. They both have that attention to detail. I'll do whatever it takes to get the job done, and I know that there's a team around me of people that I'm going to rely on and work with, and so I want to make sure I elevate whatever or can do whatever to help them elevate right, what they need to do. So Brady has that, at least, you know, that much we can be sure of. And then, you know, the time commitment, and will he like it? Will he enjoy it? You know, he's at a level in his life that he can kind of pick and choose what kinds of things he wants to do.
How was working with Joe Buck and Troy Aikman when you would move from the booth to the sideline for those big games?
Yeah, it was terrific. I mean, it was fun during the year to call games over that stretch. I worked with everybody from Daryl Johnston as an analyst to Rondé Barber. And then I get to go be a field reporter. I had a lot of fun with Aaron Andrews as a sideline team. And then Joe and Troy, you know, you go on the road for the stretch of playoff, you know, two or three playoff games and then the Super Bowl. So you are spending a lot of time together. And it was kind of a refreshing little type of thing with a big job, but I want to say refreshing. I mean, personalities to hang out. You go to dinner, you sit in the film room and go over notes and things like that. And you go to a practice and then talk the car ride after. Hey, what about this? Or what do you think this guy said? What he meant? And you get a good sense of that. So especially Troy and Aaron, I hung out a lot separately and had a lot of fun. Got a lot of football, but had a good time talking about a lot of things in life. Yeah, good people.
Do you have a favorite analyst that you've worked with or even somebody that you haven't had the opportunity to call a game with that you'd like to call a game with?
Well, that's a good question. Well, I wouldn't say I have a favorite. I say all the people I've worked with as analysts, and even in doing some NASCAR and some baseball, you know, Eric Caro's terrific to work with in baseball, Dontrell Willis in the studio, Jeff Gordon, Clint Boyer, outstanding as NASCAR analysts when they did their studio portion, which is what I did more of in that than calling an NFL game. But I like that question about who I would like to call a game with. You know, maybe a Peyton Manning or a Tom Brady. You know, Peyton Manning, because I think his sense of humor, which we're seeing more and more of, right, with the Manning cast, I just think, you know, he would be a blast. And still, you know, focusing on the game, but handling and having a reaction to situations. Those are just a few off the top of my head. But that's a good, it's a good question. I really had thought about that. I'm always just kind of taking the assignment and getting ready for the next thing. But that's at least my first thought.
What did you think when Buck and Aikman went to ESPN last year? Like, obviously you understand that this is a business as well as anybody, but still, was it a surprise to see them leave Fox considering how long they had been there?
Yeah, it was a shock because they were the staple of other than the studio group, right? From 30 years of covering this, our 30th year in the NFL, right. And Super Bowl's coming up. So I think we were shocked, and we always say in sports when a player is traded that we liked or signed or unsigned or is cut loose, you know, hey, it's a business, right? It's a bit, well, and here we saw firsthand the business, the inner workings, and I'm not sure how it all unfolded. I would say that just talking to those guys, it worked out well for them from a financial standpoint. For the NFL, I think they're happy from their standpoint. And the emergence of the Fox crew of Kevin Burkhardt and Greg Olson with Aaron Andrews, the job they did on the Super Bowl, if there were any skeptics or any doubt, it showed you the power of Fox covering the NFL and the people behind it, and then the people who had the opportunity to capitalize on it, that it was kind of a win-win all the way around. But to answer your question, yeah, it's jolting when something like that happens if you don't see it coming. And most of us didn't.
Yeah, of course. You worked for ESPN for a decade. Now you've been with Fox for well over two decades. What were the biggest differences between the two?
Well, there weren't a lot of differences when you talk about the early years, and I wasn't at the very beginning of ESPN, but those were the growth years, and through the 90s, I call them the golden years, when everybody knew SportsCenter, ESPN, and of course, it's grown since, but as something grows, sometimes lines of communication, layers, it affects a little bit of how it used to operate, so it changes. At Fox, I got there in when they were really the NFL, baseball, and the Simpsons. So then they added NASCAR, more college football, and you see where Fox is now. So I think I was, for me, grateful to have the opportunity with both of these, you know, really outstanding and sports operations, that I got there in the early years where there was opportunity to do other things, where you did have good communication lines with people in management. So there weren't layers of people. You could go in and talk to them, or they could come to you. Hey, we need to work on this. Or you say, hey, I got an idea here. What do you think about doing, you know, in this broadcast, the detail and the idea of having fun. I mean, we're covering sports. I mean, yes, there's serious side of doing the news in sports, and the game is the thing. You never want to misrepresent that. But sports is supposed to be enthusiastic, fun, enjoyable. And the early Sports Center days showed that, and the early, and still now, with each of these, but the NFL and Fox, there are Terry Bradshaw, Howie Long, that crew kind of set the tone. So in a game, it's a little bit different. You can't be having so much fun there because you're concentrating on the game. But I think it allows for personality. I think ultimately that's what I'm saying. You got to do the job, do your homework, know your stuff, but personality will help separate you from other people. So the people say, yeah, I like this guy, or I want to watch this guy. Or look, we watch the games for the games, as long as the announcers don't screw it up. and then if they're really good, then they enhance the game and we appreciate them even more. And certain situations sometimes show that. But I would say overall, I mean, again, I feel very fortunate. Not that I look back and analyze the career, but the timing worked out well for me. And ESPN, I mean, to have worked at both places for that long is a little bit unusual. And to cover at ESPN, too, we mentioned the Tom Brady thing with Fox and Super Bowls and some World Series there. But at ESPN, I was there for sports, and it was interesting. Some of the things that I was thrown into, an earthquake World Series, an Olympic bombing, to be in the middle of those and be reporting on those. And then with Fox, the Dale Earnhardt, the tragedy in the Daytona 500, that he this fatal accident. So those are things that go beyond what you thought you were going to be covering with games and talking to athletes. And then you react, and you have the support of the people at those networks around you to do the job the best you can for the viewing audience.
Were you ever, I'll kind of preface the question with this, because like almost everybody earlier this summer, you had expressed some surprise at the Kevin Brown story getting removed from Baltimore Orioles broadcast after he shared a very harmless statistic about the team. Has anything like that ever happened in your career? Were you ever unfairly reprimanded or censored on a broadcast?
I'm with you on that. That was really, I mean, it's like, whoa, where are we going? If the home team announcer can't, like Kevin Brown announced that the way he did, he was very professional about it, and he was still shaping it for the home team. So, yeah, that was a little disturbing. But no, I've never said don't do this, don't do. But they have said, hey, remember, we're broadcast partners with the NFL or with NASCAR right. or with baseball. So you can voice your opinion, just be able to back it up, be supportive. I mean, they also sometimes a sense of humor. They say, oh, don't be careful, especially you have to be sometimes in today's more ultra sensitive. That's the thing that's changed a lot, yeah. Brandon. You can't even a shot in the stands. Used to be able to say, hey, that guy looks like, or whatever, look at his hair, whatever. You don't know who's watching, you don't want to offend anybody. So that's more where I think the guidelines have changed a little bit through the years. But no, I never really got, I have to say, they've been very fair about, I think one time on going back on ESPN, I remember before ESPN got baseball rights, the commissioner, I think it was Faye Vincent, said something about, he's making a reference to, ESPN doesn't really have baseball games. They just have like tractor pulls and pool on TV or something like that. And then we got the rights to baseball, and we were showing a highlight or something, and they had a shot of Faye Vincent in the crowd. And I said, oh, I guess there's no tractor pulls for him to go to or something like that. And I remember them saying, that's not Chris, be careful with that. And then later I interviewed Faye Vincent to talk to him. He's like, that's okay. Sense of humor. I get it. I was a little tough on the situation at the time, all part of sports. So there are those little moments, but yes, we have to be more aware of that. And the old expression, you don't bite the hand that feeds you, but you have to have credibility. I mean, you have to right. be able, and that's what bothered me about, the Kevin Brown, the announcer, he was stating facts, he was not giving an opinion on how bad that was. And he was also turning like, hey, there's a chance for us to, we often say that doing, I try to take the positive. Hey, let's just say the Panthers haven't beaten the Falcons in 10 straight games, but today they have a chance to turn that around, as they have a 10-0 lead in the fourth or whatever it is. So, that's kind of a long-winded way of answering your question, but we have to be, announcers today have to be more aware of that anyway, even before their bosses advise them on what to say or not to say.
You hosted Up Close for a few years when you were with ESPN, and I'd say the most famous interview that you did was O.J. Simpson in 1998. Was that also the hardest interview of your career?
Yes, that was definitely, and it was controversial, not from the sense that I was going to do it when we had the opportunity, but I think some people, even at ESPN, even in our own company, were like, why do you want to put that guy on the air? You know what I mean? We've already, and I was like, well, because I'm certainly not going to talk football with him. I told him when he wanted to come on, and he wanted to come on. I mean, he said, because I've watched this. First of all, we were trying to get him on years before all of this happened with the alleged double murder, and which the evidence was overwhelming, and then the wrongful death lawsuit. But so that'll happen. Then he's years after that, not years, but it was, I think, a little bit after that second trial.
Yeah,
that his attorney said, hey, he's willing to come on, but it's two conditions. You have to do it live, and you can't ask about his children. And he said, you know, OJ thinks Chris is fair and wants to come. So I think, and we were glad to do it and meet those conditions, but I said, I have to ask whatever I want to ask. I thought it was a good thing for people to see him in a live situation. I think Barbara Walters was supposed to get that first live interview, but he didn't, that first interview, but she wouldn't do it live, and okay. He wouldn't do it unless it was live because he didn't want to be edited. I had to prepare differently than sports, legal material and court documents. And I met with, prosecutors and police and defense attorneys so that I would at least in that amount of time be prepared for how he would respond to certain things, and so that I asked the questions that people wanted to know after all watching. We were all glued to the trial and post comments and things like that. But it was one of the greatest challenges, I would say, in the business that I've ever had to run into.
And during that interview, you asked OJ if he was capable of killing someone, and I think that was a telling question, and it was a little bit chilling to even hear it with something that bold. Like, do you almost have to build confidence during the conversation to be able to ask a question like that? Or is that something going into the interview that you know that you're going to ask that?
Yeah, I had some things I wanted to cover. And the most important thing in doing an interview is listening to what they're saying and following up. And if you go back, you can watch the interview on YouTube, and
yeah,
you'll see there's some contentious moments. But you're right about that. That question was one. I knew Brandon, he wasn't going to come out. Well, I didn't know, but I figured he wasn't going to come out and say, hey, I did it. Can whatever, but double jeopardy. But I wanted to have a question. It's not a gotcha question, but where people at home could see his reaction on what he said. I was surprised, as you said, it was chilling. I mean, some of the things he said were, but I went in saying, I'm going to work that question in somewhere. I think it's important to are you capable of killing? Because he had, in watching some of the things you'd done and what went on in the court documents, his stories and things were like searching for the real killers, right? I mean, I asked him, like, can you show us, give us a name of a detective, private eye, whoever, a check you wrote, something that would prove that you're really searching other than you're out on a golf course. I mean, I wasn't that sarcastic, but I was thinking that. So,
yeah.
And I tried to be fair. I mean, even though when I looked at all the evidence going into this thing and stuff that even I think the jury never got to see, I mean, it was overwhelming. There wasn't any doubt. I mean, the only doubt was, did he have some help in cleaning things up or doing what he did? But that was a question. There were a few that I wanted to, and that, remember, we were supposed to do a half hour live up close interview with him. And once we got rolling, I think the executives at ESPN thankfully said, hey, let's keep going. This is, we don't want to cut this short. So we ended up doing 50 or whatever, almost an hour type of thing, which we had a lot more to get to. But I appreciated that he at least did the interview and let people judge for themselves based on his answers. That was kind of the goal there.
Were there other interviews from your career that you remember being difficult or contentious?
Yeah, I had a Mark. You remember Mark Gastineau with the Jets?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, defensive lineman. He was one who came in and was upset about, I don't know if it was his personal life or what was going on, but he went off into some thing about his therapy in his life, and then he got a little angry with me about some things. He had we were in a I think it was a a commercial break, and he said, "Hey, I had some dental work done as a favor, and I want to thank these people if I can when I come back." And I said, "Well, we really don't do that kind of thing." And so we came back, and he did it. He took his right before we came back, he took the dental like framework of the teeth and dropped it in my coffee cup right before we came back. And I was like, "Oh, okay, well." And then I said, "You need them to talk." And it was, and then he said something like, "He did that." He goes, "You don't like me, do you?" And I said, "Well, no, it's not that I don't like you. I'm just trying to conduct an interview here." And he said, "Bridget," he was dating Bridget Nielsen, right? Or Bridget Nielsen, the actress, yeah. Right? And he said, "You know, we broke it. No, he ended our relationship's over, and I'm upset about it. But I have a tattoo of her, and it's on my, it's on his ass." And he's like, "I'd like to show you." And he starts to stand up, and I'm like, "Oh, it's like we're kind of live to tapes and turning this around." And then he went into this hole, and I felt sorry for him in a way. I don't know if he was on medication, but he had this whole thing about, "Hey, when I was a kid, and, my dad, I left my bicycle in the driveway, and my dad backed up over it, and he blamed me for it, and I never got over it." And so then I felt like meanwhile, I'm trying to get back to football, and I'm not a therapist. So, but we finished the interview, and we fly guests out, and I think he was going into wrestling or boxing at the time. This was in the early 90s. We fly guests out. We put him up in a hotel room nearby, near the studios in Hollywood here. But anyway, he went back. Instead of flying back, he went back to the hotel room and wouldn't come out, apparently. I wasn't there for that, but we had to get the police to make sure, number one, he was okay, which he was. But he just didn't want to leave the hotel room. So I think they had to eventually force him out to get out of there. So
much, much less contentious are your interviews with Bill Murray. How did that friendship come about?
Through the ESPYs in the early 90s, one of the first ones, I was doing SportsCenter with Dan Patrick, and he said, they said, "Go down, we're going to do the ESPYs. Bill Murray watches, and he's going to be part of the award show. We want you guys, he'd like to have you guys be in there somewhere." Not that he was producing it. And I think Dennis Miller was maybe the first host. But anyway, we walk into this room. There's all these writers, and Bill was like, "Hey, we don't really need you for this, because these guys write their own stuff on SportsCenter," and he watches. And so after that, we him and I talked a little bit. He's really astute sports fan. Obviously, not just Cubs, but like golf, he can talk specific and some other things. So we hit it off. And then he's kind of an interesting guy. Then he said, "Hey, let's go to a game sometime." So we go to I was doing a weekday show, and he said, "Let's go to a Mets game tomorrow." And so I met him down there. I drove down from Bristol, Connecticut to Shea at the Shea Stadium at the time. And this van pulls up and parks to the side. It looked like, some rock band or, the Partridge Family type looking thing. and he gets out, he's got this hat down, and you wouldn't recognize him, but he's like, "Here, I got our tickets. Let's go." And so it's like, okay, he doesn't want to be bothered by it. So we get in, and we walk down, and we're a few rows back from home plate. And I think it was Mark Grace who was batting Cubs Mets. And so I said, "What's with the outfit, Bill?" He's like, "Well, I just, people want to watch the game. I don't want to be a distraction." And then I forget, there was some pitch with the umpire or something. And he jumps up and yells, "Come on, that wasn't a strike. That wasn't," like yelling like a fan. And then all of a sudden, everybody, including, Mark Grace, looks back and says, "Hey, Bill," and all is like, "Hey, Bill." So there's a swarm around him. And the rest of the game was fans being interested in Bill Murray. But since then, we've golfed. I mean, he's been over my house. I've been out to his house through the years. Some of his movie openings, he's just, he's everything you hear about the kind of guy on the street he is. He likes that. He loves people, comes from a big family. We're friends to this day. So I'm grateful for that. And he, by the way, he also recommended a book. When some people said, "Chris, would you do the OJ interview?" I talked to him back then, because that was later. And I said, "Hey, this OJ interview." He goes, "Well, of course you should do it." He said, "There's a book to read. It has something to do about how you talk to kids and how you listen and how kids talk to you as a parent." And he said, "Read that." He goes, "That'll help you with a guy like OJ, the way he tries to, spin a conversation." So it was a helpful hint from Bill. And I've bounced some other things off of him through the years, and he's, where he'll send me a text, "Hey, you overdid this, or you should dial it back on that," or whatever. So sometimes he's joking, sometimes he's just being a sports fan critic. It's kind of a very interesting relationship, one I never thought would have developed over 20 plus years.
Do you take a lot of pride in being such a versatile broadcaster. I mean, like baseball, football, NASCAR, you're a sideline reporter, play-by-play announcer, journalist, studio host, radio host. And it's one thing for a kid out of college to tell a local news station that they can do anything, but to go out and make a career out of being great in all facets of sports broadcasting is really rare.
Yeah, I do take pride in that. I think it started out trying to prove myself, right, in a number of different ways. And then along the way, I saw that, and I admire people who have done one thing, baseball, their whole life, and they do it well, and they do it great, sure. And that's their thing, or even two. But I kind of, as a fan, I told you football is a year-round sport in terms of following it. But I, when one season would end, I would always get excited about the next season. Okay, so now we're into, you know, baseball. Super Bowl is over soon. Spring training and baseball, and then there's the Daytona 500, and you know, I used to cover some more basketball when I was at ESPN with the NBA Finals in the summer. So I kind of liked. Hey, well, now that's it. Can I be a part of this? How can I contribute here? You know, and to do it at a network level. Again, thankfully, networks that allowed that that weren't so specific, but yeah, I think it keeps me sharp, you know, and I enjoy it. There are breaks. I do have time off and downtime, but even then I'm like, wow, what's the next season? I'm looking forward to this or looking forward to that. So I think that I didn't go in with a plan of doing that, but as things evolved and as 24-hour sports channels came around, and now channels that are all NFL, all tennis, all baseball, whatever, it provides more of an opportunity for people to do things at those networks. So it opens up opportunities at other networks like Fox, where you have to be versatile. And I think I would get bored maybe just doing one thing. At some point in my life, I'll probably get to that stage. And I don't mind doing, whether it's field reporting here or calling a game there. And in fact, I think it was an advantage to be a sideline reporter for so many years and then go to the booth. I think you just see things and you can transition things and I think play off your analyst. I mean, I think that's a bonus if you have a chance to do those types of things. And there are some things I carry through each sport that sometimes is a benefit, whether it's dealing with a coach or a manager or some of the production, the problems you run into. But I think it's a healthy thing. At least it is for me, and it's never gotten stale.
Last thing is Aaron Rodgers and the New York Jets. Are they being overlooked this year, or you think they're getting enough coverage throughout the off season?
Well, I think they're getting overhyped, but that's first of all, it's New York and it's Aaron Rodgers. So, and Aaron is such a fascinating guy. He's one of the most analytical people I've ever watched, let alone an analytical quarterback in terms of how he analyzes himself, the game, his teammates, broadcasters. So, any team that adds an Aaron Rodgers is an upgrade, but I'm still a little hesitant for a couple of reasons. Number one, you know, Robert Saleh is a relatively new head coach, and I was around him a lot when he was a defensive coordinator at San Francisco. So there's that in the New York pressure cooker. And you're in a division, the Jets are, with some very good teams. Even with a downtrodden Patriot team, you still have Bill Belichick, who can outcoach you once in a while, or at least do enough coaching to get a win when he probably shouldn't. And I think Buffalo and Miami are really good football teams as well. So, but I think it's good that the NFL's really been fun that way, and that we've had, you know, Russell Wilson moves, it didn't work out, but it was still a big story. And then you get the other side of that, where Geno Smith, you know, who is tossed aside, revives a career and turns, you know, Seattle takes him to the playoffs and now has this outstanding job. So you have veteran quarterbacks that get a lot of headlines. And then you have, you know, these young guys coming in that who's going to be the next, you know, is Joe Burrow or, you know, Herbert, or, you know, obviously Mahomes is the standard at the moment. So even though Brees and those guys have moved on, and who knows how much longer Aaron Rodgers will play, I think that's fun. But as far as the Jets, right away, notice this, Brandon, that when Tom Brady went to the Bucks, right away they went into prime time, as many as you could fill, right? Sunday night, Monday night, the Jets, who were barely in prime time, the minute they get Rodgers on the schedule, we don't know how good they're going to be. We're assuming they're going to be good. Right away, they're in prime time, Monday night, or wherever, however many they can fill. So a star quarterback will do that to you. You just have to hope the team holds up around him, or at least they come through for that team.
Chris, you were great. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast today. I really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. All right. It was fun.
That is Chris Myers. I'm Brandon Contis. This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Please rate and subscribe to this podcast. Please also subscribe to Awful Announcing's YouTube page. But regardless of how you consume Awful Announcing and the Awful Announcing Podcast, thanks for listening and be good.
Thanks for listening to the Awful Announcing Podcast. For the latest news spanning the sports media landscape and more, check out awfulannouncing.com and follow us at awfulannouncing.com.